Welcome to Black Armada Tales, an actual play podcast. My name is Josh Fox. My pronouns are he and him, and I will be GMing tonight's session of Last Fleet. And with me, I have
Becky Anderson. My pronouns are she, her, and I will be playing Lieutenant Emily Loris, callsign Hellcat, and that's the Ares playbook.
Ed Tomlinson, he, him pronouns. I'll be playing the other Stone Cold legend, Dr. Tobias Roy. Scorpio playbook, pronouns he, him.
Nick Bate, also he, him pronouns. Tonight I'm playing Commander Sam Buckley, Captain of the Hecate. That's the Taurus playbook with he, him pronouns.
And I'm Sue Elliott, she, her. I'll be playing the Gemini playbook, Sonia Vega, whose pronouns are also she, her.
So I would quite like to progress what's going on with the Marines, because I feel like it's quite important and we're kind of flying around looking at different things, but we need to know what's going on there. So the sit rep, I think, is that initially Loris and the other rapiers were flying cover for these two shuttle loads of Marines which have headed over to the Alexander. They're relatively slow moving. They fought off a wave of pod fighters, and then Loris zipped off to deal with Dr. Roy's impending nervous breakdown and possible absorption by the Korax.
Ascendance,
yes indeed, quite his apotheosis and becoming like unto a god, possibly. While that was going on, the Marines, of course, were still making their way towards the Alexander, and I think they have now docked with the Alexander. So I'm imagining, by the way, it makes sense to me, you sent two shuttles out. I think we established that they've got tractor beams to help maneuver these fuel tanks into place, right? So it seems logical to me that one of them was depositing Marines into the ship to release the manual release. I don't see why you would drop two in. Wouldn't you want the second one to be ready to do the tractor beam? Or
no, it's not my problem. I've got a crew for that shit. Yeah, I'm assuming they're doing something sensible over there. So we have some information on what the ship is like.
I'm thinking tactical positioning-wise, I think one of them is going to be docked with the Alexander and Marines presumably inside doing whatever they're doing, and one of them is in position ready to start giving little tractor beam prods to the fuel tanks and send them in the direction of the Hecate.
Works for me.
Great. Of course, while all this was going on, more pod fighters are also coming out. So, I would just like to know, yeah, what are you doing about that, basically? Loris, you've disabled Dr. Roy's ship. So, are you going to leave him there?
Am I holding any plus one forwards? I think I am holding a plus one forward, aren't I?
You said that you wanted to keep a plus one forward to reflect how you exploit your success on the thread the needle move.
Yes.
And at the time, I expressed doubts that you possibly could exploit that to get a bonus, but you said you definitely could, so you wanted to take plus one forward. But you do have to explain how doing so exploits the brilliant move that you did on Dr. Roy.
So do you remember that bit in Battlestar Galactica where Lee's engines have been shot out and Starbuck locks her fighter up with his and brings him into the hangar?
I very well remember that.
Well, I would like to take plus one forward because Dr. Roy doesn't have working engines right now, which means that he's just an object that I can manoeuvre in space thanks to my actions.
So you want to do that?
A very precious object.
Well, it's either that or leave you out here to die in the cold of space. I mean,
should have just left me to fly into my ascendancy, then everything would be fine, wouldn't it?
Sam told me not to do that. By any means necessary. And he's making tip-top ace decisions right now.
Yeah,
so
he's really on the ball at the moment.
Josh, you said that in that kind of you're going to do what voice, which felt a little judgy.
To be honest, if I'm judging anything, I'm judging your decision to shoot out his engines instead of finding any other way to stop him. But
well,
I mean,
how else was I supposed to stop him? He was like going to...
I don't know. It's too late, that omelette.
You know what? I'm not justifying myself to you because I know I made the right decision.
Oh, that's great, because there's no one to justify yourself to anyway except the voices in your head, so...
Well, they are in complete agreement with me, so...
Good. So you're going to do the same thing. This is the, so in the scene you're referring to, the two ships are kind of vaguely kind of U-shaped, I guess, and you, one clips its U into the other and pushes it. I don't know whether anyone listening to this podcast will understand what the heck I'm on about, but they tessellate the two ships anyway.
Are there tractor beams on board the Hecate?
Yes, I think if you can get it close enough to the Hecate.
Yeah, that's my thinking. So if I can just kind of... So I don't even need to lock with it. I just need to nudge it so that it floats towards the Hecate.
Point of order, I think the Hecate is about to move. So
just leave me floating further into the depths of space.
Nick, I think you better say some more about that.
Yeah, oh, I can do. Yeah, sure.
Can you say some more about that before I knock the Doctor into empty space?
I'm patiently waiting for the battle clock to tick up, and then I will spring into action to prevent that from happening.
Nice. Okay. Well, I think it might be about to tick up, actually. So,
We can take our time about that. That's fine.
What I'm hearing is currently you're still focusing on rescuing Dr. Roy, and that will take you a little bit of time, not an infinite amount of time, but enough time that some other stuff might happen.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that I want to tick the battle clock up.
Well, this is my moment. So Sam is standing on the bridge of the Hecate, watching all this unfold from his tactical display. And by all this, I mean a space battle plus borders plus my own Marines finally breaching the Alexander. And I think it's pretty clear to Sam that if we're going to salvage anything useful from this situation, it's right down to the wire. And so we can't be faffing about with ferrying fuel pods over vast distances of space. So...
Oh, fuck.
I just realised what you're going to do.
What do you think I'm going to do?
Do you tell us and we'll tell you whether we were right. We don't want to steal your thunder.
Yeah, your idea might be better than mine.
Leave and never come back.
just jump away.
Yeah. No, I think what Sam does is he's probably leaning on the tactical table at this moment because it's all spiraling a bit. And he might even say out loud, kind of under his breath, "We can't wait around for those pods." And then he calls out, "Helm, we need to get the Hecate closer to the Alexander. Plot a course, bring us in as close as you can. Put the hull of the ship between the Alexander and the Korax tendril so that we can shield the fuel pods coming back to the ship. Bring us in as close as you possibly can."
"Aye, aye, Commander." "Is that the right number? Did I do it right?"
"It's good enough, Captain, I think." But point here is that I'm using my last hold from my tactician move, which says I can order my forces to redeploy and erase one segment on the battle clock.
Cool. Yeah. I think that works. So, in effect, you are blocking the pod fighters that are emanating from the tendril from messing up the Alexander.
While also bringing the Hecate dangerously close, so that when we're talking about ferrying full fuel pods over, we're talking about a very short distance rather than having to hurl them a long way.
Yes, okay. Well, this is interesting. So you basically described that as though you're getting quite close to the tendril. Is that...
No, I want to... Well, I don't know exactly where the tendril is relative to everything here, but I want to position the Hecate between the tendril and the Alexander so that anything that's coming from the tendril...
Do you know what? It can't be that close because I think we established that Loris had to kind of disengage from stuff in order to go over to the tendril and that was a fair distance away. Okay, cool. So the effect of that is that it cancels the battle clock increase that I just announced. And with it, a point of attrition, which had it occurred, would have done damage to the fleet.
So effectively, I've bought us all some time, and now everybody else needs to get their shit together and finish the job.
So I think as the Hecate sort of hoves into position between the Alexander and the tendril, some of the fighters are going to be kind of redirecting themselves to attack Hecate, or at the very least to try and evade its various and sundry, what do you call those things, the turrets?
Like point defense cannons?
Point defense, that's what, yeah, to avoid its point defense stuff. The fighters swarm around the Hecate, and the few that are able to get through are being taken down by the Hecate's rapiers, currently led by Catan.
Yep.
Who is ably directing them, and I think he probably shouts over the radio, "Loris, we need you back over here. I don't care what's going on with Dr. Roy."
Well, I mean, Dr. Roy's not going anywhere, is he? Like, he's just, like, in space. And
he is very near to the tendril. That's the problem. And he did have those, remember those Korax ships were sort of, seemed like they were almost trying to herd him in. I don't know what will happen if you just leave him there. Could be a risk. But on the other hand, now Hecate is much closer than it was before.
So I could go and shoot some Korax and then go back and get him, right?
Well, I think if your proposal before was to nudge him towards Hecate and then go and get on with it.
Yeah, that still stands.
I think you can probably do that, and it's a bit easier than it was before. I mean, it eats into some time.
I'll do that then.
Okay. I don't think I'm going to make you roll for it because you already threaded the needle.
But what about my plus one? No, actually, you're right. I won't. I don't need to roll for this. I can just do it. I'm that good.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe.
No, you're right.
What do you think? Yeah. I wouldn't want to deprive you an opportunity to roll an excellent dice roll, Becky.
Oh, I've got a bit of a headache tonight, though. It takes a lot of concentration to mentally manipulate the dice in the way that I do each week.
All right. Well, I think you get the fringe benefit from Sam's move of moving the Hecate into place that you can easily shunt Dr. Roy over towards the Hecate, presumably letting them know that you're doing that so that they actually have the opportunity to... Yeah.
We've got the transponder going too, so...
Yeah, they got the transponder, and I'll probably just, like, flick a quick message over, which says something like, parcel wrapped up and delivered.
The engineers are going to hate you.
Why?
For physically using your fighter to nudge a ship in space.
That's true.
Assuming that the engineers are able to do anything, given that there are currently Korax on board your ship.
That's very true, yep.
Thought they'd hate me more for blowing out the engines, to be fair, rather than just nudging it in space. No?
I think, that was that message to Sam?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. I think Sam points at the comms officer, which just means connect me to that person. And the comms officer does. And Sam says, understood, Hellcat. We'll do what we can. But I think Catan needs you back in the fight.
Aye, aye, Captain.
And then Sam might say, comms, give me Dr. Roy.
Yes.
Roy, are you alive in there?
Yes.
Hold on, things are going to get bumpy.
What, more bumpy than my engines being blown up?
I'll just cut the comm connection.
Just fortunate you didn't hear my next sentence then, I guess.
I mean, we're going to try and catch the doctor, but I feel like that's going to take a bit of time, so maybe that's not where we want to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think Loris speeding back towards the Alexander... The Marines will be, I don't know whether we cut in to see the Marines on board the Alexander blazing away at some rather unpleasant looking, kind of spindly limbed, cobweb featured creatures. And then we see one of them pull a lever and shout, "Fuel tanks away, Commander." And from outside, we can see there are, I think we agreed, six kind of lozenge-shaped tanks attached to the rear of the ship, which are now sort of drifting outwards from the centre, and your second shuttle is manoeuvring into position to start kind of slingshotting them into your what exactly?
I think, how big are these lozenges?
I mean, they must be pretty big, right? Otherwise, they'd be a bit of a waste of your time.
And have we established, how do things travel through the Tenebrium? Like, if these get, I'm thinking of jump gates in Babylon 5. If these things are close enough when we translate through the Tenebrium, are they going to come with us? Or are we going to need to...
So I think you could attempt to jump with them nearby. My imagining is that the jump drive projects a field around the ship. So if you can get them within the radius of that field...
Don't get any ideas.
But it would be risky.
Yeah. Well, we might not have time to do anything other than what's risky. I guess I had originally pictured that we would bring them into the hangar. But if they're too big for that... this might be the only option we have. We don't have time to strap them down to the ship or anything like that. That's a complex operation.
The hangar's big, though. These aren't that big, are they? Surely they're not gigantic.
Well, I mean, the question really is, how big are they relative to a shuttle? And if it's,
I think they're bigger than a shuttle. That was my thinking.
But is it a couple of times bigger or is it 10 times bigger?
The question is, how big would they have to be strategically valuable to an entire fleet?
Yeah, well, we don't know anything about how the fuel works. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking they were very efficient fuel cells that I could carry.
It's like a theme crystal. No, I mean, I think they've got to be big, right? But honestly, I'm not sure it matters because we're going to have to do something risky here. We don't have time to do anything more sensible.
It makes sense to me that your ship does not have a special space which isn't big enough for you to just whack six chuffing great fuel tanks in. So it makes sense to me that you would indeed have strapped them to your ship had you perfect leisure time. So I think you've got two suboptimal options, assuming you're not going to do that. One is to attempt to jump with them really close, and the other one is to attempt to manoeuvre them into your shuttle bays, even though you haven't really got enough room.
Yeah. I think we're just going to have to see how this plays out. Maneuvering them into the shuttle bay is probably the preferred option, but seems pretty unlikely to me, especially if we're trying to catch Dr. Roy and bring our rapiers home. So I think we're getting closer to an emergency jump.
Okay, cool. So I think that we are going to have spore pods starting to envelop the Hecate and kind of make their way around to the other side, to the sort of lee side of the Hecate, where the Alexander is, and try and pick off the fuel tanks or the shuttles, or indeed the rapiers that are there. And yeah, what do you do, I guess, is the question.
What do I do?
Hmm.
I'm going to shoot them down, Josh. So I think I'm just doing a straight engaging battle, aren't I?
I think you are doing a straight engaging battle.
Which is good, because I'm a pilot. Because I get special on that, being a pilot, don't I?
I don't remember.
Well, if you don't remember, how the rest of us going to have a chance at remembering anything?
You've got books. Books are where you find out those things.
Ugh.
When you engage in battle while piloting a combat-ready ship, you choose one less option on a 7-9.
Thought so. I don't have a plus one, do I?
Nope. Well, you got. I presume your roar is plus one, is it?
Why does it look like I've got a minus one?
Oh, you probably do.
For something.
Yeah, you were carrying a minus one from your conversation with Buckley way back when. Did you never apply that?
Well, it's still on my sheet. Well, I guess I'll have to apply that to this then.
Yay.
Woohoo. Well, I better roll it and rip the band-aid off. I rolled a 10. So. 9.
All right. Okay, so with the minus one and 9. Okay.
Oh, no. No, it's not. It's not, because the minus one cancels out my plus one from my roar, so it's a straight 10.
Right.
So, engage in battle, roll roar. On a hit, I overcome a tough target's defences or destroy a number of weaker targets, hold off a determined assault or drive away a formidable opponent, or keep a target safe during the battle. And I don't have to choose any of the downsides. I guess I'm going to slightly kind of confer with the military tactical minds in the room, my commanding officers, both CAG and Captain. I'm assuming what you want me to do is destroy a number of weaker targets? Or do you just want me to, like, keep the Hecate safe, or the, like...
fuel tanks?
The fuel tanks safe, or what?
I think at this stage, keeping the fuel tanks safe is the most important bit. I mean, we've already been boarded. We need to not lose those fuel tanks.
Okay. Then that's what I do.
It's just logical to me. I think if you don't choose that at this point, it would be surprising if none of them got damaged.
I will keep the fuel tanks safe. Sorry, Dr. Roy. I did my job. I shunted you into the tractor beam, so...
Yeah, the whole rapier wing is, like, flying in perfect coordination. We've got you, also Catan, and of course Phantom picking off the pod ships as they get too close to the fuel tanks. I think we now need to know whether you can actually get those fuel tanks where you want them. And I think that's on you, Sam, probably.
Yep. I mean, I think from the command deck, Sam's probably issued the recall order, like a general call that says, fuel tanks are in the air, confirmed. Congratulations to the Marines. Now, get home as quickly as you can. Rapiers, cover those fuel tanks. As soon as the Marines are on board, bring your fish home and we're out of here. Now, push comes to shove, I might have to push the trigger before everybody's home.
Yes. I think that's so. I think we might have to roll a shake-off move to see whether you can pull that off. Basically, whether you can get everyone where you need them to be, or whether there's going to be some which don't. However, I also observed that some time has passed, and I may have to tick up the battle clock again.
Nothing I can do about it this time.
Yeah, that's bad news, and I think that's going to affect what's going to happen next as well, because I think over on the Hecate's engineering deck, Korak's warriors have done something to damage the shuttle bay doors, like the launch bay doors, and I think those doors are like jammed into a half open position. So like as people are starting to come back, you will have ordered the doors to open.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this kind of horrible groaning sound as some sort of mechanism fails and the doors get stuck half open.
I bet there's a red flashing emergency light up on the bridge that engineering throws onto the command panel.
Yep.
Shouted in, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, I think you'll get the Marine captain radioing in going, what's going on, Hecate? Those doors aren't opening.
Sam will say, engineering, how wide are you going to be able to get those things?
Oh, who's your chief engineer? You need a character for this, don't you?
I do, yes. Yeah, in fact, I do. I need a name.
Let's say it's Raquel Alagona, chief engineer on board the Hecate, who is a very down-to-earth, plain-spoken woman with close-cropped hair, and we'll see her on the radio go, I'm working on it, Captain, but this could take hours. I don't think I'm going to be able to get it that much further open. I'm going to see, I can force it. I can force it to open a little bit more, but that is going to wreck the mechanism. It's going to take us weeks to fix if we do that.
Alagona, I need that door wide enough to fit a shuttle in. We'll deal with the other problems later. Make it happen.
You got it, Captain. And you hear her shouting as the little Baker foil phone or whatever it is you've got comes down. You hear her yelling, "You heard the Captain. Get those doors open."
And then I'll flick on. I'll ask comms to give me the Marine Captain, and I'll say over the comms, "Marines, this is Hecate Actual. We're getting those doors open as wide as we can, but you're going to have to squeeze in however you can. Make it happen."
I think we'll get a shot of a very nervous looking, quite young looking Marine Captain. And yeah, I think you better roll some dice to find out.
I think I better roll some dice. Yeah.
Go south.
Am I shaking it off?
I believe you are shaking it off. Yeah, I think you're shaking off. At this point, what you're shaking off is the possibility of something being left behind,
right,
or it being destroyed by the fighters before you can get away.
I hope you've got pressure to burn.
I do have pressure to burn because somebody has been through a breaking point action.
Mm.
You may find it hard to believe. Don't have that much pressure to burn, to be fair. All right, I'm rolling plus hard, which is plus one for me. So I am on an 8, which becomes a 9. And, I mean, I think it's worth a point of pressure.
It's definitely worth a point of pressure. I can help you get rid of that later on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Count on it. And that's XP as well. I raised the pressure there. So that pushed me up to a 10.
Superb.
On a 10 plus, you're in full control. Take plus one forward.
That is good. You might need that. So we've still got Korax on board, but I kind of feel like having them tidied up by your Marines rather than continuing the giant snowball of carnage.
Have we actually made it out yet?
Right, so I can narrate that. The answer is yes.
Narrate it, please.
All right. Yeah, winding time back a little bit, the Marines scraped their landing into the shuttle bay quite literally just in time as you activate the jump drives at the moment that the fuel pods are within range of your jump field, in theory, and with the usual sickening feeling, you jump into the Tenebrium together with your 6 fuel tanks and a full complement of Marines, those that didn't get killed on the mission, that is, and some Korax on board.
Yes, my samples.
Yeah. So I think we can probably say that the Korax are taken down by the combined effort of your Marines rather than playing through a kind of corridor by corridor battle. But there might be, like, Korax stuff is unpleasant. It tends to linger. There might be Korax stuff on your ship. It will require concerted action to be certain that there isn't, other than the stuff you know is there in the secret lab.
Yeah. And the shuttle bay is badly damaged.
That's true, yeah. Thanks for listening to Black Armada Tales. We've been playing Last Fleet by me, Josh Fox. You can find information about Last Fleet and all the rest of our stuff in the show notes. If you like what we do, then we'd really appreciate it if you shared the podcast on social media or gave us a review, preferably a 5-star one, as that really helps people to find the podcast. See you next time. So I was at Playtest Zero earlier today.
Ah, how did that go?
Yeah, it was good. It's the second time I've
been. Which Playtest Zero was it? Was it, because there's more than, which time zone?
Oh, I do the Southeast Asia time zone because their evening lines up nicely with my kind of early afternoon.
Nice, cool. Were you playtesting one of yours or did you?
I did, yeah. So I've been twice. The first time I just played somebody else's game, which was a kind of chess thing. I can't remember the name of it now, but it's like a 3-way chess game where nobody told me that there was a hidden theme until after we played the game. Yuri Chess, is that?
A hidden theme, did you say?
Yeah, so the game is named after some sort of thing from manga or anime that I'm not familiar with, okay. Which is basically, I think, about, I'll probably mangle this, but I think it's about kind of lesbians kissing, basically.
That seems like a very simple concept. How would you mangle that?
I just don't remember because I looked it up at the time and I was like, because I said, oh, I had not understood the concepts of the hidden concepts of the game, and somebody replied on Twitter going, well, it is in the name, and I was like, oh, okay. Then I googled the words from the name, and I wish I could remember. I'm going to try and look it up. Anyway.
It was
an interesting game. It's a 3-way chess game, and the idea is that the win conditions connect somehow to whether one of the characters in the game is going to kiss another character in the game. But this was not mentioned at the start at all. As far as I could see, it was just a chess game. So I just went all out to try and win the chess game, and I think possibly did.
Well done, you won!
Did that mean you won the kissing game, or you lost the kissing game?
I think I might have prevented the kissing from happening because that was the role I was playing unbeknownst to me. Anyway, yes, today's playtest series was great. I playtested my little card-based conflict resolution system, which was quite interesting to see how other people played with it. And I played a little bit of a kind of fencing sports game, which is belonging outside belonging style. And yeah, so it's nice. It's interesting to game with some other people and
Charming.
Try some stuff that I wouldn't otherwise have done.
A slightly different crowd than perhaps usual.
I didn't mean different from you, Ed. I just meant these losers.
Yeah. Fair enough. I'll accept that.
Good. It's Yuri Chess. That's the name of it. So Yuri is evidently a term of art that I didn't know about.
Me either.
I'm the youngest end of Gen X, so I don't think I'm supposed to know about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I kind of thought it. Well, also because it's good, a lot of the players are from Southeast Asia, they may have a different cultural context as well.
Yuri.
Don't know.
My first thought was Yuri Geller.
Yeah. Yuri the Surgical Strike is also a 2019 film, apparently.
You should have been like, well, I assume that the game of chess was a way the way it's successfully bent a spoon.
Okay, it's a genre of Japanese media focusing on intimate relationships between female characters. So I wasn't simplifying it at all, was I?
You might be spelling it differently.
Y-U-R-I.
Y-U-R-I. Not like Yuri Geller, then.
No,
is
like
that not
Yuri
how
Geller.
Yuri Geller spelled?
No, that's U-R-I.
Ah.
But he does pronounce it Yuri, doesn't he, as opposed to Uri.
Yeah. But he was a 70s celeb, so maybe he just accepted whatever name was given to him by the Joe Public.
That's true. Was he 70s? I kind of imagine, I kind of associate him with my childhood in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah, no, he was before that.
Wow.
Maybe somebody should make a role-playing game about lesbians kissing where the main mechanic is something to do with spoons.
Lol. Probably already done.
What would you do with the spoons, though?
Would be the best pun ever. Anything I suggest is bound to come across badly, so I think I won't.
1971. Did he start performing?
When did he finish performing?
Still probably doing it, isn't he?
Yeah, I assume so. He's not dead, is he?
No.
He feels like he could be dead. But
no, he feels like he's one of those celebs that's going to like live forever.
Did he go all conspiracy theorist?
What do you mean, did he go all conspiracy theorist? Well, man bends spoons for a living with his mind.
You just assume that that's like his grifter phase. And then he goes on to actually believing what he's doing.
He's only 76. Like, I'm surprised at how young he is, to be honest.
Maybe he started bending spoons very young.
Yeah, well, he was a male model first, and then he went into spoon bending.
Excuse me.
Yeah. A nightclub entertainer.
Pretty logical
bending
progression.
Bending spoons in a nightclub.
Well, I guess he wasn't bad looking.
Mm. Yeah. Are you looking at pictures of young Yuri Geller at the moment? So.
Yes, I am, yeah.
Well, now I'm going to have to look at pictures of young Yuri Geller.
Absolutely ruining my internet history.
Yeah. Perhaps you'd like Ben Spooning for Beginners.
Like, you could see him sort of modelling...
Should I say Ben Spooning?
You could see him modelling knitwear for, like, knitting patterns.
Oh, well, there's an interview with him in The Guardian. Quote, I still blow my own mind. Nice.
Goodness me.
Curator of his own museum of his life.
I've just realised Dr. Roy looks a bit like Yuri Geller in the picture.
Yeah, he does.
It's not the museum which he curates of his own life, just his life. I mean, like, I also have a museum of my own life. It's called my bedroom.
Do you have little plaques?
Do you have a car that's covered entirely in bent spoons?
Do you have an audio guide?
I should get one. That'd be a really good idea, actually.
Do you have a gift shop?
Yeah, every good psychic has to have a gift shop.
I want a pencil in a razor set with your name on it.